me tell you who's doing sneakers the best in the game right now. That's New Balance. The two-way V4, featuring this groundbreaking use of technology with fresh foam. It's called Fuel Cell, creating this combination that we love of rebound and cushioning. Fresh foam offers unparalleled cushioning for maximum comfort your entire game from start to finish. The upper construction features this lightweight textile that reduces weight, which we all need, I know I do, while remaining supportive and breathable. Hard to find that combo. The two-way V4 gives you the tools that you need to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way V4 at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything that you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features, like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, ensure that you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive, so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating, so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads, so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. I've been so pumped to take a couple of friends with our road bikes to some of the trails nearby, and now I can bring the entire crew, my dog, and all of our gear with that third row. Learn more about the new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
And you mentioned point guards. Another piece I thought was super interesting was your last piece on Jose Alvarado. And I was reading it, and there's a bunch of different guards in the mix that you interviewed and that were referenced. And I guess the first question that I have is, do you think that his success, because I think it came out of nowhere, and, you know, he was ACC defensive player, but still undrafted. Do you think that this success that he's had, success that guards like Fred VanVleet have had, does that pave the way? Is this like a trend, do you think, that's happening where undersized players can come in and be really valuable role players?
I hope so, because I love those kinds of players. But I think the trend is not to me about undersized players exactly, because I think it's getting harder and harder for smaller guards to stay in the league. But I think if you are one of those guys that plays taller, if you're one of those guys that can switch a little bit, then compete against bigger players that can hold their own, then yeah, it's just like the bar is getting higher. And I think probably one of the reasons why he went undrafted is people just looked at him as a small guard. And now that he's in the NBA, it's like, well, he plays as if he has no idea that he's a small guard. He plays as if he thinks he's 6'9". And that's exactly how VanVleet plays. That's how, you know, Alex Caruso is one of the guys that was quoted in the story that I think that's who Alvarado had told him, like, you paved the way for me. Like, I saw what you did to go from a two-way to like being a rotation player in the league and all of that. I think Fred VanVleet didn't tell me exactly what Alvarado told him when they spoke, but it sounded like a kind of similar deal. Like, I think Alvarado saw in those guys a kind of path for himself. And I think there's a reason. It's like those guys defend like crazy and they have offensive skills as well. I mean, Fred VanVleet's an all-star at this point. Yeah. But I think the idea is if you can be an elite defender at the guard spot, then you can survive. If your teammates have to cover for you all the time, and if you can't guard multiple positions and all of that, then like you basically have to be a superstar now on the offensive end to survive. But I do think, at least in terms of like defense first, like really, really intense, competitive, smart, like the guys that are in the right places and manage to affect a game on both ends, like if those guys are coming out of college, if those guys are coming out of wherever and teams can get a scout on them, they at least have guys they can compare them to, right? Like if they say, we think he can be sort of like a VanVleet or like an Alvarado or whoever, I think that helps.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think you have to sort of be careful when, like, I don't want to start to say like every guy Alvarado size can do that, because if they could, then Alvarado wouldn't stand out that much, and we'd be seeing more guys that size kind of make it. And I think what we're actually seeing is the opposite. Like the bar is getting higher and higher and higher if you're a small guy.
Yeah, which makes him even more of a unicorn. I think that's what makes and his teammate Herb Jones so fascinating too, yeah, is all the things that he can do defensively and his quote, I mean, Scotty Barnes, Alvarado, and Herb Jones, all guys that lead the way with defense, really, and that mm-hmm. are good passers and can kind of be unicorns in their own way and haven't been seen as these like offensive, you know, firepowers, you know?
Yeah. I think I love when Herb Jones and Alvarado are on the court together. Like, I think some of those, especially when like when the Pelicans have Larry Nance at the five spot, like they're closing the games most of the time with Nance at the five. Now, the last few games, Jose's played the whole like fourth quarter and started with that Houston game where he basically dominated it. But the Pelicans are like, they have a ton of firepower. Like, their team is built to be an elite offense, even though the shooting isn't that great. Like, they just destroy teams on the inside. And I think what you're looking at from now until the end of the season is like, can they find that balance of like all that firepower, being that efficient offensive team while also getting enough stops to beat the best teams in the NBA? And I think Willie Green's playing around with the lineups to try to get to that point. And I really like the look that they've been going with lately in the fourth quarter, where Alvarado has been on the court and Nance has been on the court. It gets trickier to like slot Herb Jones into that lineup when it's like crunch time, because you have Ingram and CJ and Zion on the team. But like throughout the game, you can see the Pelicans get to some really good defensive lineups, even if they're not like a top flight defensive team.
Is it more difficult for Willie Green, in your opinion, to make decisions now that Zion and when Zion is healthy?
In a way, I think he enhances what they do. He lets them do a lot more, but I think they're still doing a lot of experimenting. The point Zion stuff that we saw from, you know, the last time he was healthy when Van Gundy was the coach, that was like so exciting. But it was obviously going to look different when he came back, because like, it's a completely different team now. It's a new coach. CJ McCollum was not on the team before. The bench is like totally different now, but I mean, just finding the space within a game, even finding a space within just a possession to be like, all right, we're empowering Zion to be the decision maker here, the playmaker here. Like, it gets a little trickier because CJ needs his possessions doing that. Brandon Ingram needs his possessions doing that. You have other guys like Jose Alvarado, Devontae Graham, Dyson Daniels all think of themselves as point guards. They are not always the guy bringing the ball up the court when they're on the floor, but just by virtue of the fact that all these guys are on the team and getting minutes means there's going to be fewer possessions that Zion Williamson is like bringing the ball up and doing that. And we know he's so good at that. And it's only in recent games that Zion has gotten to do that stuff a little bit more. And I still don't think they have found the like just natural, easy rhythm of like, we are just flowing from one action to another where like Zion and CJ are playing in harmony and making each other better and all of this stuff. I think they're still working through all of that.
Yeah.
And I think where their offensive numbers are, despite that, is like pretty impressive, because they're kind of still in preseason mode. Like, they're still in experimentation mode. Zion missed some time. Ingram missed some time. CJ was shooting like terribly to start the year for some reason. But I think the ceiling's really high. It's just they have that stuff to balance, and they just have a lot of good players. So the rotation is not obvious and simple. It's a good problem to have, but it's also like a legit problem. And like, those decisions, once you start talking later in the season, once they've had the time and once they kind of know what's what, like when you're in a playoff series and you're figuring out who you're going to start, you're going to close games with, who's going to play with whom, like that stuff can like swing an entire game and like swing an entire series. So they do have like a sort of serious thing to do here, which is like basically figuring out like how the chemistry is going to work.
There's like a lot of one-sided players on this team. A lot of good players, you put them together in a different way and they really complement each other well. But, you know, I guess Brandon Ingram's probably the best guy who's in terms of like balanced offensively and defensively. And that makes things tricky, I think, in terms of just what that lineup looks like. Another really great defender that you featured was Shea. I love Shea so much. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. This year, he's finally, I feel like, he's broken through to mainstream, you know? I feel like he was every, like, hoop heads, you know, one of their favorite watches last year until he got shut down due to whatever injury or tanking or both. And now it's like, yeah, he's there, you know, 40 point games, game winners. What was the process of you deciding you wanted to feature him? And like, when did that pop into your mind?
So that one wasn't as like intensive as some of the other ones we talked about. That was basically like the Thunder in town. And I knew I wanted to write about his defense. He is maybe the most improved player in the NBA right now, even without the defensive improvement. Like he's been so crazy. Like the reason why it seems like he is getting all this attention he didn't used to, even though he was so great last year. Like he's third in the league in scoring. Like he's like Ja Morant isn't averaging as many points in the paint as Shea is this year. And Ja was like,
I think he leads the league in drives per game.
He does. I mean, he has like, I think this is the third straight year he's led the league in drives per game, but he is so much better in terms of like the finishing numbers. He is actually weirdly, like he's shooting far fewer threes, but it doesn't matter because his mid-range numbers are completely insane. His usage is like near the top of the league. Just what he's doing night to night is so difficult, but yet he makes it look so easy on the offensive end. Where it looks like it's hard is the other end, where I think he clearly, like if you go and watch the tape from his rookie year of the Clippers versus what he was doing most nights with the Thunder the last few years, like it was different and it was understandable. But he always had this defensive potential. He just wasn't quite doing it. And I mean, I just wanted to kind of ask him some questions about that, ask Mark Dagno about that, ask teammates about that, because I thought like, it's just so impressive that he's doing both at the same time. You don't usually see the big jump on both ends. And he has been on it. Like he's been locked in pretty much every game. The Thunder have not been amazing defensively every game, but they have overall had a really good defense, especially in the half court.
Poku shut Al Horford down.
Dude, Poku is like so fun to watch right now. And it's not even because he's doing all this like crazy, like, oh my God, like how did this guy do that? It's just like, he's just being solid, which I don't think is like what people were always anticipating out of Poku, is that he'd be like a good complimentary role player, because he just looked like such a weird prospect with such a high ceiling. And like, he still has that ceiling, but I think it's cool that he has like settled into being like a kind of normal player right now. That's actually somebody else I want to write about. But
I literally in my head was like, that'd be a perfect James Herbert.
We're trying here. Yeah. But whether or not I get to write that, like it has been fun watching him do that. And like what Shea is doing, just like being disruptive off the ball, giving more effort on the ball. It's kind of like a little bit of everything. And then the numbers are nuts. Like he's like second in the league in stocks, if that were a real category. He's up there in deflections. He's like second in steals. Like it's the work he's putting in on that end, in addition to just the like ridiculous load that he's carrying offensively, is really impressive. And like you don't see a lot of guys doing that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And they brought over Chip England from San Antonio, the shot doctor, who's just known for improving players' three-point shots by like 3%, period, pretty much everywhere he goes, everything he does, right? What do you think Shea is if he has like a consistent three-point shot?
I mean, it's funny because it's like, I want to say like, oh, he's unguardable, but like, I sort of think he's unguardable now.
Now unguardable.
So it's like, I guess it makes guys close out a little hard on him. It makes guys like basically never go under screens. I guess that would help. But it's like he's just such a unique, like he's just so such a different player. Like what he does is distinct from what like somebody like Ja even does. What he does is probably a little more similar to what Chris Paul does, who he surely learned from when they were teammates for a year. But it is even different from that, because it's all about like angles. It's this herky jerky thing to keep defenses off guard. It's not about like getting a step and then like just full on accelerating, blowing by guys. Like he's not fast, but he's usually not going super fast. Like he's making quick moves. But I don't even think he needs like a lights out pull up jumper or anything. Like he is a good spot up shooter now. And it's just, you're seeing him take fewer of those spot up shots because he's usually the one creating the offense this year. I mean, that could change depending on who's on the team. But I think you've seen him basically make a conscious choice this year. Like, I don't need to look for that pull up three, because I can get wherever the hell I want. And I can get a bucket whenever my team needs it. Yeah.
Almost like DeRozan-esque. In some ways, mm-hmm. in terms of angles and mid-range. But a lot of people do compare Shea and Ja to one another. Why do you think that is?
I think because they're both such good finishers. They're both really young. They're both exciting. But I do think there are like key differences in terms of their style. Like, Shea could never be the kind of athlete that Ja could be. And while they're both like crafty and smart and cerebral players for sure, Shea's just like, there's just kind of nobody like him. I think, honestly, like, besides James Harden, I can't think of another, like, downhill driver as good as Shea in, like I don't know, like, decades. The numbers sort of speak for themselves. Like, you can't – there's not really a defense equipped to deal with him right now. I thought it spoke volumes when the Celtics were just throwing double teams at him the other day because they never do that. But yeah. I think combination of the fact that, like, that was their best strategy because nobody was shutting him down one-on-one. And the fact that they were basically like, all right, like he is their number one, two, and three option. It's not like somebody else, like we're scared of them. So we're just going to get the ball out of his hands. Like that led them down that path. But I think that was like the ultimate sign of respect that like the Boston Celtics, who have Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and all of these guys are just like, yeah, actually what we're going to do is we're going to put two of those guys on you.
You talk about just like sort of how hard it is for small players to be in this league because, you know, the league's getting like more versatile. I interviewed Nick Nurse during Summer League. We spent about an hour together and he mentioned to me kind of in detail what he wants from a player, and 6'7" to 6'9" with a positive wingspan that can do all the things that a point guard can do and all the things that a big can do is something that I think, you know, in your article, it's, you know, how the NBA is resizing again leads me now to think about Paolo. And, and I watched him at the Garden and I saw him and they had Franz Wagner running the point and everyone on the floor was like 6'9". They don't win a lot of games, but do you think that size could actually contend? Is that a winning lineup now in the NBA?
Well, not Orlando's version, but I think that idea is like can win games now. I think Toronto overachieved for that reason last year. I was like that Garden, that's where I did all those interviews. Like I was at that game and like that's where I spoke to Paolo and that's where I spoke to Wendell and Terrence Ross and Cole Anthony and all that. Like that was not unusual though. Like that's every game this year. And part of that is based on stuff they can't control and didn't anticipate. Yeah. Yes. So like Markel hasn't played this year. Gary Harris, I think, is about to make his season debut. You know, Jalen Suggs missed a game or two earlier on. Cole Anthony's been out for a little while. Like this has been their best option because they haven't had a lot of other options. But I think in the past, like even I don't think that long ago, like I think 4 or 5 years ago, if a team was dealing with this kind of thing, you would see them call up a like traditional point guard from the G League or something.
Yeah,
and they just, no, we don't need to do that. Why? Like, why should we'll just give it to Wagner, give it to Paolo? Like, we need to get those guys playmaking reps anyway. Like, they're going to maybe lose some games because of it, but this is what they're trying to develop in their guys regardless. And it's, to me, it's very similar to what the Raptors were doing. It's just some of the lineups are even bigger because they happen to have a 7'2 Bol Bol on their team who plays like a wing and like basically like believes he's a wing. Like if you watch the stuff that he does, like it makes perfect sense. And then also their other bigs, like on offense, they're all stationed along the 3-point line and they're, you know, it's not that they are knockdown guys, but if their feet are set and if they're in rhythm, like there's no, why would Mosley not allow Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter to shoot threes? You should. Like that is where the league is going. And I think defensively the upside of having that much length and that much size is like pretty obvious. These guys are very young, so the Magic are not an elite defense right now. But I think even when it wasn't so extreme, like last year, just seeing the front line before they got Paolo, like when they had Wagner and Wendell Carter and Mo Bamba in the front court, like that was a really good defensive unit. And that was an interesting like front court to watch offensively. It's just you introduce a talent like Paolo, who's just insane and like might be the best passer on the team, as well as being a guy that is like a walking mismatch. He can go in the post, he can isolate, like do all of this stuff. Like that is what like everybody is looking for in the NBA. I don't think people think of him as like this like crazy unicorn freak, like generational, like what even is this, the way that people talk about like Wemby, or even the way people like when they first saw Chet a few years ago would have said it. But like to me, like the skill package that he has as an offensive player at that size is kind of mind blowing. Like he is an enormous guy when you stand next to him, and he plays exactly like a guard.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that because he's so proportional. And you hear the size, like you hear 6'10", 250, but seeing 6'10", 250 is just different, right? Yeah. Like, he's bigger, and I always do it like, all right, well, he's 2 inches bigger than LeBron, you know?
Yeah.
He's like just a little shorter than Mitchell Robinson, like maybe even the same height. Like, it's just sort of nuts. Or what was it? Hartenstein, he was just like a little bit shorter than. When you actually got in front of him face to face, can you sort of explain that? Because I've never had that with any player in the league, because they're all sort of out of proportion except for LeBron, but it's just somehow it's different.
Yeah, I think the way that I put it is there are certain rookies that just do not look like rookies whatsoever. Honestly, Scotty is kind of like that last year. Like I remember watching him just in like not even in person, like just watching him on TV in summer league and being like, oh, he's like bullying guys, like cool. And then you see him do the same thing to like NBA veterans, you're like, all right, this guy is like kind of built in a different way than most of these guys, because like a lot of times it's normal, it makes sense. These rookies come in, it takes them like 2, 3, 4 years for them to get strong enough to like just survive the rigors of a season and take contact on the inside and all of that. And like Paolo is just, he is not that at all. Like he was just a physically dominant in college, and I think a lot of the time when a guy is physically dominant in college, the question is, all right, is he skilled enough to do this at the next level when he doesn't have that advantage every night? And it turns out, well, A, yes, because he's skilled as hell, and B, like the vast majority of the time he still has that advantage, because if you're going to put a guy that is quick enough to guard him and stay with him, a lot of the time he's going to be just stronger, bigger, more powerful. And if you're going to try to put a bigger dude on him, a lot of the time Paolo can just like go right by him. I think you're seeing like a trend of tall kids being more skilled and thus young players being bigger and more skilled every year. So like, I don't know what Paolo's like advantage over the average kind of four man or whatever, if we're even talking those positions, like 5, 6 years from now, I don't know what that will look like. But as of now, I mean, there are guys who can like credibly guard him, but it's not a long list.
Yeah, no, it's not. And offensively, he's super gifted. Like you said, just an incredible passer. His vision, willingness to pass. I think it's really interesting.